Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Go there today, HuntRealEstate.com. It's completely redone as of the beginning of May, and I encourage you to check it out. It's got more resources, and we'll be talking about some of those resources as we go through the show. But bottom line is this, there's three algorithms, more resources than you're going to get any other website. I know many of you may have the Zillow app on your phone. Check it out and then compare it to HuntRealEstate.com, and I think you'll be favorably impressed with what we have. And HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's guaranteed. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's very, very competitive real estate market, you'll want to make sure that your offer, when you find the house that you want, is as competitive as anybody's. And the only way to do that is to go in there strong. The strongest thing that you can do is have cash. Some people with cash will just put cash on the contract, and that's very fortunate for them. But the fact of life is your pre-purchase commitment is the equivalent of cash, and a good real estate professional will be able to advise the seller of that so that your offer becomes extremely competitive. And also look into our Second Look program. If you've already been qualified for a mortgage from another lender, be sure to call 633-3700 and ask them, we'll pay you for this, by the way, if we can't match or beat what you've received, we're going to give you a $50 gift card. It's no risk, no cost, and a matter of fact, a benefit to you if it doesn't work out, and what you have is, in fact, the best that you're going to get. We'll make sure that that's the case. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700 for personalized, customized, knock-your-socks-off service, and check out that low-rate guarantee. Don't forget about the first-ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. Simply dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve. It's faster than going to your phone and looking up an address. It is faster than doing that, believe me. And by the way, it's a total description of that property, not just something that might have come off Google someplace. We're in a very active market right now, and if you ever are considering selling your home, there's probably never been a better time since I've been in the real estate business to capitalize on the investment that you've made, and also perhaps look around for something else that might be more suited to your family's lifestyle at this point in time. So check out what's going on in the market today. Stop into one of our many open houses, and when you get there, ask our real estate professional if they could tell you about our seller security plan, which is very simply this: we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That is the seller security plan, available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA Professional. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Sabres, and Rochester Americans. Big game tomorrow against the Patriots and a home opener for the Sabres next Saturday. Exciting time here in Buffalo. I encourage you all to take advantage of the great opportunity we have in that professional sports world. We are broadcast live here at WBEN 930 AM, and for those of you who'd like to participate in today's show, you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls, and you can even text us here at 30930, and that'll give you a live feed right in here to the studio to share with us any questions or comments you may have. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is a very special person for our community, the director of the Albright Knox Art Gallery, Dr. Yanni Siren. Good morning, Yanni.
Good morning, Peter.
It's great.
Good morning, listeners across Western New York.
It's great to have you here. You know, I really appreciate you being here. I know that there's another event in your family's life that's pulling at you, and I appreciate that you've taken the time to be here with us, and hopefully we can make it worthwhile. And I know you'll make it worthwhile for our listeners, but before we get into our are what I'd like to ask you about this morning. There's a, you know, you were quoted somewhere recently as saying that of all the places you've lived, and you lived in many places all around the world, that you are liking Buffalo the best. Is that, am I approximately right there?
The statement holds true. Seven different countries, 13 different cities, and I've never been happier than I am in Buffalo with my family.
That's exciting to hear. What would you say, first of all, go back in time, tell us about some of those places you've been, and also bring us up to the present and why Buffalo and Western New York is so important to you.
So I was born in Helsinki, Finland. That was in the fine year of 1970 when ABBA was around and a couple of other bands that some of you may remember.
I do remember.
When I was 12, 13, the family moved to Switzerland, and I grew up in the Italian-speaking section of the country, speaking basically four languages, Finnish at home with my parents and my brother, Italian with my friends, German with my German teachers, and English was the main language of the school that I attended. So that was Switzerland. After Switzerland, I spent a year at the University of Uppsala in Sweden. From there, went on to move to the U.S. Really, it went to Holy Cross College in Worcester, Massachusetts, about an hour west from Boston along the Mass Pike on a beautiful campus. From Worcester, I then went to graduate school at NYU in New York City. And during my graduate study period, I spent a year in London, a year in Vienna, Austria, a year in Stockholm. And then right around the time when I had about a chapter left in my PhD, I had to go and complete my military service in Finland. So then I sort of transitioned into the middle of the wilderness, literally. I was in the Finnish Special Forces long-distance reconnaissance patrol of the Finnish helicopter special ops unit. That was an interesting exercise after, spending several years with my nose in the books. So I basically became a special forces operator in a long-distance reconnaissance platoon. During my army days, met my the woman who would become my wife, Sonia, whom many of you know. Mm-hmm. And then after I got out of the army, I the first thing I did is booked a flight to Jerusalem because she was working in Jerusalem, Israel, as a media correspondent for the Finnish, basically equivalent of the Finnish BBC, public broadcasting system, and Finnish radio and TV stations. And of course, I needed to find a job in my new habitat. So I was lucky to get first a one-year position, which then turned into a four-year, ultimately kind of a tenure-track situation for me in Israel. From Israel, we moved back to Finland in 2004. Our first child, Gabriella, was born in Helsinki in 2004. I worked in Finland then for 4 years as a museum director in two different cities, the last gig being the directorship of the Helsinki Art Museum, one of the largest cultural organizations in the Nordic region. And then in late August, early September, a search consultant from the U.S. called and said, are you interested at all in a position that we are seeking a new director for? The Albright Knox's 11th directorship is up for grabs, so to speak. I of course knew the Albright Knox from art history books and from my graduate studies extremely well, and it was a clear I knew that moment that I would want to put my name in the hat, so to speak. But I of course had some family members to consult, namely my wife and at that time our three kids. I didn't ask the dogs. And I remember coming home that day from work in Helsinki and asking Sonia in Finnish, oletko koskaan miettinyt Buffaloita? Buffalo, and which in translation in English means, have you ever thought about Buffalo? And she said, you mean the animal? And I said, let me rephrase that. Let's talk about the Niagara Falls. Anyway, the wonderful thing that happened then is that with great vision and kind of an astute approach, the Albright Knox Board of Directors and especially its search committee not only interviewed me, they also interviewed the partners of the finalists. So Sonia actually visited Buffalo twice during the interview process, and a strike team of board members visited Helsinki once. It was a very thorough search. I'd never seen anything like that. So it was very impressive. I think it was a day after Christmas when Tom Hyde, then the incoming board president and head of the search committee, made the proposal, and we said yes, and I think the board voted on January 13th of 2013, and then I started in April of 2013. So it'll be 7 years in April of 2020.
I was there. Remember
you
that?
Were there.
Important time for our whole community, and appreciate the fact that you said yes. It was a good day for all of us. This is a show about real estate, and I want to kind of tie in everything you just said with what our mission is here, which is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real estate. What is the contributing value that you see in a cultural institution like the Albright Knox to the overall, not just a subjective lifestyle issue that we know it impacts, but the hardcore issue of what it does to the value of the real estate in a community? And you've been in several communities and seen this. What not only that, where you've worked, but what you know about other museums around the country and around the world?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, and nobody's really come up with the right algorithm to measure this. I mean, you have algorithms on the Hunt real estate site where, you know, it'll help you find a certain type of a house with a certain number of bedrooms and, you know, financing and all that stuff. But what makes a city attractive, or what makes a certain locality attractive? There's not really an algorithm for that yet. I'm sure one will come. Maybe one of your listeners will get inspired and start coding today.
That would be great.
Which would be great. But here's what I know about cities and their attractiveness. They are literally thousands of cities across the world. But why do we travel to Rome? Why do we travel to Paris? Why do we travel to Athens? What are the kind of magnets or the distinguishing features that draw people in hundreds of thousands of people to these places? If it was just buildings and regular infrastructure like public transport and kiosks and restaurants, every single city has those. What you look for are distinguishing features. You look for the Eiffel Tower. You look for the Pantheon. You look for the Uffizi Gallery. You look for the Acropolis in Athens. You look for those things that somehow make the place special. And I think that's why museums and cultural institutions and distinguishing landscape features matter so much, because they distinguish us. They make places special in ways that cannot be fabricated or just sort of invented on the fly. These are things that have been built over decades. They have accrued this huge symbolic significance over time. They just cannot be helicopter dropped like a special forces strike team from a helicopter to a place. These things are part of the DNA of a community. So whether you are a museum goer or not in Western New York, every day you reap the benefit from the fact that there's an Albright Knox here, that there is a BPO, Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra here, that there's a zoo here, that there's a children's museum. Even if you never visit those places, your real estate value is going up because these places are operational in this community. Just may I, Peter, give one
sure.
example from
By all means,
of this from just this past summer. Everybody in the U.S. knows the New York Times. It's a well-known publication, and it's known globally. What many Americans don't know is that there is the equivalent of the New York Times in Europe. It's called the Neue Zürcher Zeitung. It's the main newspaper of Switzerland. It's published in German, but everybody, every mover and shaker, everybody in the business industry, everybody knows that when the NZZ, the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, writes something, you pay attention to it. So just this past summer, in a major Saturday edition of the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, they published an article, a full-page article, entitled After Decline Comes Reconstruction, Buffalo's Second Chance. And subheader, a spectacular museum project is expected to give the former industrial metropolis new splendor. Every mover and shaker in Europe read this article. That's 450 million people. U.S. has a population of 330. I'm not saying 450 million people read it, but that's the European Union that this paper impacts. And that's the headline. I'm showing Peter here the picture. That's the picture of the new museum campus.
Spectacular.
And then with the headline underneath it. So, you know, I get calls still today about, amazing article, Janne, in the NZZ. You guys are really doing the right thing there in Buffalo. I don't think, I've said this before, and I keep sort of repeating it like a parrot, I don't think Western New York and Buffalo understand the value of the cultural asset that we sit on in the Albright Knox. It doesn't have anything to do with me, by the way. You know, my team and I, we work hard today, but the Albright Knox is the result of 157 years of visionary collecting, of visionary philanthropy, of visionary caring. So when I, you know, occasionally make appeals to our community to consider supporting the Albright Knox and its aspirations, and sometimes people support us and sometimes people say, well, I'm not really into the arts, I'm always thinking, this is not about the arts. This is about the future of this community. Imagine if Paris was to lose the Eiffel Tower or Athens was to lose the Acropolis. It's not like we're going to lose the Albright Knox, but we have an asset here that never loses a game.
You know, you're exactly right. And just to take that to the subjective for a second, but let's go to the stay on the objective for just a second, because what you're leading up to is really, it's not, and I think you said this very well, it's not just about someone's interest in art or science or music for that matter or the parks or anything else. It's their presence that contribute to the community wealth. And when that wealth increases, everybody benefits, whether you physically go there or not. And there actually is not quite an algorithm, but there have been studies done that show that if you live within one block of the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, the value of real estate is X percent higher than if you live 10 blocks or 20 blocks away. So there is an immediate radiating effect on residential and commercial values by its proximity, by their proximity to a cultural institution of that kind of quality.
Absolutely.
And there's no question that our museum, our art gallery, I guess we still call it a gallery, but
for a few months.
For a few months, then we changed the name. And there's a reason for that, and I want you to touch on that in a second too. But there's no question that the presence of that in North Buffalo right now not only affects the values in North Buffalo, but radiates out from there to the entire community. And this is, people often ask me, why are houses so close together in Buffalo? Mm-hmm. And I tell them, like, there's two answers. Number one, it's less to maintain, and our forefathers thought about that a long time ago. Secondly, it builds a sense of community, which is extremely important. And thirdly, we are one of the few cities in the world that has as many purely residential neighborhoods inside the city limits as we do. Last week, I had Mark Poloncarz on, our county executive. And last week I had Jim Fink on from Business First on real estate. And I asked him where the next up-and-coming neighborhood would be. And he cited the east side of Buffalo, largely because of the presence of the medical campus. But that's only a mile from where the art gallery is, which is an amazing thing if you think about it. So that concentration our forefathers thought about a long time ago about keeping people together yet creating residential neighborhoods is one of the most powerful things I've ever seen in any city, and I think we take it for granted here. But the presence of the Albright Knox plopped down in the middle of all that and then surrounded by an Olmsted Park is truly spectacular, not to mention the fact that there's a substantial university across the street with another art gallery, which is an amazing thing. But there's one other thing I want to ask you about because it's something I think you can feel, but it's not something that people can define, and that is the impact of fine art museums on – And the radiating effect it has in terms of attracting other artists, just to be close to it, on what some people call a coolness factor. Just comment on that and what you think the gallery adds to Western York's coolness.
Well, another excellent question, Peter. So art museums in some people's minds may have this kind of stuffy aura. You know, they're the place where mummies live and go to die, so to speak. Well, as one of my former colleagues, Mr. Hooving, former director of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, would say in the title of his book, "We make mummies dance." I can put another spin on that. We make art cool. Much of the art, many of the exhibits that you see at the Albright Knox, they are so interactive these days that people of all ages, let's say young people of all ages, come there to interact with the works. We're one of the few museums in the country where more than 50% of our visitors are under 50 years old. That's very unique. We have an extraordinarily youthful visitor base that ranges from kids to young families to college students. Of course, yes, the proximity of Buff State has something to do with this. But if the place isn't cool and hip, the young won't come. And I think that it is one of the greatest manifestations of the fact that we're doing something right when we see this number of young people and young families and, like I said, kids of all ages visiting the museum. How do we do it? It's a combination of factors. It's how we present the art, but it's also the type of things that we put on display. And interactivity, the ability to interact with the works in a fun way, is kind of the magic.
I'm going to come back to that because that's a very important thing, and we'll be right back with more with Dr. Yone Siren after these very important messages from our house to yours. Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but in all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our links. And you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at HuntRealEstate.com. Back to the inventory for a second. If you go to Zillow right now, I just want to advise you that they have no obligation to keep their information up to date. There's listings that are on that site that have been sold for months, our own listings. We know this. We have, within our site, we have the absolute obligation to make sure that our inventory is current and up to date and is updated every hour. So you're getting exactly the up to date information about everything that's truly available in these communities that we serve. And you'll also, including those homeownership services, are everything related to what you're going to need. It's basically a concierge service for home ownership, and it's all there at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after. And in a community like Buffalo, Western New York, and even Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, where we've got an aging housing stock in many cases, part of our city, which gives it some of its charm. Some of that charm is just that and requires updating, and you'll want to know exactly what you're getting into in this program. The Buy the Before and Live the After gives you that opportunity. 633-3700, ask for details. And as I mentioned before, if you've already been committed, pre-committed, or whatever it might be from another lender, let us take a look at it. We call it our second look program and make sure that you're getting the lowest rate and closing costs, and that's a guarantee of ours. We feel so strongly about that if we can't match or beat the price and conditions of that mortgage commitment or the qualification form, whatever it may be, we're going to give you a gift card for $50. So call us today, 633-3700. Ask about that pre-purchase commitment as well. And if you'd just like to pick up the phone, ask us any question you'd like about real estate or anything related to real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center at 633-9400, the only one of its kind in North America. And we'll either answer your question right there on the phone, or we'll direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need. Whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERL buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA Professional. I'm in studio today with Dr. Yanni Siren, the director of the Albright Knox Art Gallery. We've been having an interesting and a little different chat than we've had in the past. Yanni, I was looking over our notes from previous discussions, and the last one was almost a year ago, 11 months ago, as a matter of fact. And you've mentioned some things that you've never mentioned before, and I think it's important that we just underscore those and then bring it up to date in terms of what actually how our listeners can actually interact with the art gallery today. So really, we're talking about coolness. How do events build that coolness? Because I've obviously know quite a bit about them, but our listeners may not. How does the art gallery choose to appeal to different segments of our demographic out there so that we can attract more people into the gallery?
Well, that happens, of course, on multiple fronts, and part of the action is within the gallery walls. But let me talk a little bit about our activity beyond the gallery's walls, because I think that part of our coolness factor is really found on the streets and on the walls and on the waterfront of our community, and that's through our public art initiative skippered by our public art curator Aaron Ott and his team. Basically, since 2014, we have been placing works of cool art across Western New York, the east side of Buffalo, the different more rural parts of Erie County have seen our interventions. Sometimes these interventions are migratory and transitory, meaning that they have a very short lifespan. They can be sort of happenings that are in a given place for about 3 weeks or something like that. And some of them have a more permanent nature, such as Shark Girl on the waterfront, or our 19 murals that now polka dot many of the facades of buildings in Buffalo and in Erie County. And many times people don't even know that we're sort of behind these works of art or these visual interventions, as they may be aptly called on occasion. And that's okay, because it's not that we have to always logo and label ourselves as being the facilitator of a given artistic intervention. What matters more is that the community benefits from those interventions. So take, for example, a mural on the east side of Buffalo on a location that has never seen public art before and where real estate prices have been depressed. Think of the Freedom Wall, which presents the portraits of 28 civil rights leaders, both local and national, some of them still living. These are very powerful symbols for our community. They engender a sense of ownership. They engender a sense of pride of who we are, where we are coming from, and what we are doing. Buffalo's and the Albright Knox's public art initiative is so prominent today that people in Europe are starting to talk about it. The Albright Knox is the only museum in the United States that operates a public art initiative in collaboration with the city and the county, and that's thanks to Mayor Byron Brown and County Executive Mark Poloncarz that really believed in us and in this collaboration. So it's rather magnificent to see how these works have come to be a part of our community. Just to give you one example, a few years ago we did a work that had to do with rewilding Western New York. This was basically an effort to bring back certain indigenous plants to our community that are very important for the monarch butterfly and its migratory patterns, for example. And we engaged an artist, and basically people were invited to take these pouches of seeds that contained seeds for wildflowers indigenous to this region, historically at least, and they were you could pick them up from these newspaper boxes across town, and we also used biodegradable balloons to spread them across the region. So that was also an artwork, though not your traditional oil paint on canvas type of a work, but a work that was very interactive, sort of captured the imaginations of young people and anyone concerned with our landscape and with nature in general. So it was, you know, it's things like that that make us cool and special and exploratory and help us inspire a sense of wonder in people. I think that sense of wonder is something that's kind of special to every person. You know, you go through your day, there can be many routines, lots of stress even, and all that kind of stuff, and challenges and problems and hardships. But if somebody is able to bring a sense of wonder to your dining room through an interaction or through something that you saw on your commute, on your way to work, like a billboard that says, "You are beautiful," that can make a difference.
No question about that. You talked about our mural program, and I had the pleasure of taking a tour of those murals, many of them this week, which was, I mean, we were traveling the whole time, which didn't allow us to stop and look. But talk a little bit about the particular artists that we've been able to attract to this community, because Aaron's work and just getting it out there has been really important in terms of bringing international notoriety to this project.
Yeah, it's first of all, it is a combination of local and internationally recognized artists. Many of them come from Western New York. About a third, in fact, of those 19 murals have been created by what we would call local regional artists. About a third, perhaps, by national artists, and then another third by internationally renowned artists. Hurdle Avenue, certainly, thanks to Joel Ferraletto and his efforts, has become a hub of public art murals. So if you are driving by Lombardo's or walking on Hurdle Avenue by Lombardo's restaurant, you will see a large work by the Brazilian mural artist Cobra. And that was just completed in August of this year. And it has already become a landmark. So people will say, "Oh yeah, let's meet by, you know, Mark Twain's picture," because of course in this work of art, Mark Twain is a central figure.
A Buffalo Boy of sorts too.
Absolutely. So while the work may be called untitled, it certainly is something that is there. Another work that's just come online, literally completed this Friday, is called Metamorphosis Number 5. This is by an artist who was from San Francisco but now living in Berlin. His name is Tavar Zawaki. It is the largest mural in Western New York. It is truly, it is big.
Massive.
It's
unbelievable.
It's massive, and it is a landmark already. It's very colorful, and you'll find many sort of visual symbols or kind of directions in it. Mostly it's an upward symbol, and I think Tavar mentioned it in his comments to the media on Wednesday last week. He said that, you know, I feel this rising tide in this community. By the way, when seven cameras showed up to that media conference, he was just blown away. He said, "Do you really honor all artists like this? I mean, the media really gets the importance of art here." He said, "In my entire career that spans two continents, I have never witnessed something like that."
Wow.
So it's very special how the artists also feel about this. Of course, there's Louis Jones's Wildflowers for Buffalo from 2018. You can see it's right adjacent to the Buffalo Public Library. There is Muhammad Zaman's Our Colors Make Us Beautiful, also of 2018. Work and Play by the Polish street artist Oteki. Chuck Tingley's and Matt Grote's We Go of 2018. And of course, then there is the Freedom Wall. I mentioned that earlier. That's the work of four artists: John Baker, Julia Bottoms, Chuck Tingley, and Idris Wajed. And they collaboratively and together created this string of portraits of 28 civil rights leaders. So that's a very that already has become a destination, both regionally as well as nationally, for people.
So we've looked outside of the gallery. After the break, we're going to come back and look at the gallery itself, and I want you to bring us updated on the project. And we'll be right back with more from Yanni Sirin from the Albright Knox Art Gallery, from our house to yours, after these important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new huntrealestate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the low rate and closing cost guarantee, as well as the pre-purchase commitment and even the warm home loan. We have a very special show for you that we're in the midst of here. We've got about 13 minutes left. Dr. Yanni Siren from the Albright Knox Art Gallery, the director of the gallery, is here with me today. We've been talking about kind of a lot of external factors, the impact of a gallery on our community in terms of the value of our community, what happens when you engage the community in different ways than just inviting them into the building. But now let's take a look at the building. But before we get to the building itself, Dr. Siren, where do we stand in terms of sculpture in addition to the murals?
So if we think of our, it's sort of divided into two segments, our sculpture program. Part of the sculpture is indoor sculpture that lives within the museum, in the galleries, in various different exhibits. Many of you saw Subodh Gupta's This Is Not a Fountain, although it kind of looked like one, which was in the sculpture court of the E.B. Green 1905 building last year as part of a major exhibit. Then there is a sculpture that is on our campus. Perhaps the most iconic of those works is Nancy Rubens's work that we colloquially call Canoes, which has just been moved from the west side of the campus to the east side of the campus in a semi-military operation.
That was a project.
It took a year of planning. And then, of course, there is the sculpture that is in the broader community. Most famous among those works would be Shark Girl. Shark Girl is not someone that we can all the time look over. She's several miles apart from where the main campus is. So we rely on our neighbors, on our community partners, to take good care of the works that we place at some distance from us. We've got a work by Shane Dark in a park in Amherst. The fact of the matter is that we help put these works out there, and we rely on good neighbors and on good communities to take care of these pieces.
Let me interrupt you there. I think one of the things that's happened as a result of this, though, is that by inference or just through osmosis, those kinds of actions have encouraged other organizations to get into the act of commissioning artists to build really remarkable sculptures all around town. The Buffalo Renaissance Foundation, the Junior League. There's been several that have been involved in this. So talk a little bit about how what you're doing kind of creates an incentive for others to do something similar.
It's contagious, basically. I mean, I think that's what it is. And I think that developers particularly have seen the value of public art as a part of making their projects unique. I mean, if you're going to build a very complicated architectural edifice, it'll cost a lot of money. If you're going to integrate public art in an intelligent way into your project, it will cost money, but it is not as expensive as, let's say, WOW architecture, for example. And I think that what developers have realized is that the public and future residents and future tenants are thirsty for this. Because, again, it becomes, like I said in the earlier part of our conversation today, these structures become, in a sense, landmarks through the integration of a unique artwork with them. When an artwork comes on a wall, it becomes the artwork that defines the identity of that building. Oh, yeah, you live in that place with the colorful work by, the Berlin-based artist Tawaki on the wall. Way cool. I'll see you there below the yellow splash of paint or whatever. So, I think that as ships in the high seas, we look for beacons. We look for lighthouses. We look for symbols of wonder and greatness. And that's what public art brings to our community, to different parts of it. And we're not the only one doing it. Like, you're exactly right. I mean, people are starting to work directly with artists to create works of art on their residences' walls or in the neighboring parkland or what have you. So,
well, one of the things, you just use the term sense of wonder, that I think a lot of our community is wondering about is the building itself and the campus. Yeah. Where are we today? What's going to happen next? And what will happen also, and comment on what will happen when we actually have to shut down for the construction?
Right. So first of all, we are not shutting down our operations. What's going to happen is we have currently on our Elmwood Avenue campus, in the campus that I'm sure most of your listeners know, we have the last show before we start wrapping up operations there. That's a show dedicated to Anthony McCall. It is his first solo show in the U.S., and it is a show that is interactive, fun, cool, and engenders a sense of wonder in visitors. I mean, kids spend time over there for hours just playing shadow games on the walls. If you haven't seen it, make an effort to go by. It's closing on November 3rd, and that's it for the Elmwood Avenue campus for the next 2.5 years approximately. So as we then prepare the site, and this, of course, is pending board decisions and a final sort of sprint in terms of fundraising to make this all a reality, and I hope to say a few words about that as well. But the idea is that we wrap up operations on our Elmwood Avenue campus after the McCall show closes on November 3rd. And at the same time, we transition our operations to the east side of Buffalo. And we are so grateful for the Northland Corridor and all our community partners on the state, city, and Erie County level for welcoming us to this community. We come there with a humble mind and a wish to learn and to serve our community there well. We have rented a site at 612 Northland Avenue, where we will commence operations in January of 2020. That will include exhibitions, educational activities, etc. We are also ramping up our public art activities for the duration of the construction phase on our Elmwood Avenue campus. So there will be a lot more public art coming online over the next 2 years as we are building on our Elmwood Avenue campus. And we have also bought an art truck, which will be bringing art and artistic experiences to a location near you. So basically, you're going to see this blue and white Albright Knox art truck traversing the roads and highways of Western New York. It's kind of a way of us literally creating a mobile museum. So those are just some of the ways through which we will remain active, present in our community during what we call the bridge period. The bridge period basically beginning when we close the Elmwood Avenue campus, and the bridge period's conclusion will be once we reopen, and we hope to reopen in the first half of 2022.
We're alluding all the way through this show to the investment that's being made, has been made going back 157 years, as you describe, and what it means for our community in terms of increased value for everybody, value to them, and value of our real estate, and value of our institutions, and the entire attractiveness, coolness factor of our community as a whole, as we were talking about earlier. Where are we in that whole financial picture, that investment, and how much more do we need to do to get this to do everything we'd like to do?
Well, it's a little bit of a complicated question, because at the same time as we're trying to close a funding gap, we are looking very hard at the design right now in order to contain cost. That means that we're looking at materials, we're looking at specific architectural solutions. So we're kind of trying to find the middle ground between fundraising and cost containment. But let me put it in these terms. We basically need to raise another $4 million from Western New York in order to bring us to target, and without having to compromise any part of the project. And I hadn't planned to say this on radio today, and I'm sure that members of my team will be really angry at me for doing this, but I really would like to issue some sort of a corporate challenge to Western New York and ask that I would be so delighted if, let's say, 100 Western New York corporations that are not currently part of our family of supporters would join in at, let's say, $15,000. That's $5,000 a year over 3 years. That is an investment in your corporation. It is an investment in your community's future. I think that it will make so much sense for the community and for corporations when they see the global impact that this institution will have. So think about it. $5,000 a year for 3 years, 100 corporations that are currently not members of our corporate club. So
it goes a long way. You know, it is an investment, and it's not just a donation. And I think that's oftentimes, for example, people are approached, businesses like you just did, for donations, and most of the time it's to close a gap in just the operating costs of an organization. That's not what we're talking about here.
No.
We're talking about a bricks and mortar, for lack of a better term, investment that allows us to complete a project. And I would second that motion that you just made, so I'll take part of the heat when the staff comes down on you. But I don't want you to worry about that. I think you're safe. Anyway, let's I just want to mention also that how far this current exhibit reaches. My 5-year-old granddaughter contacted me through her mother this week to ask if I would take her to that exhibit.
To McCall, yeah.
Which I'm going to do upcoming. So that's kind of exciting, and it's nice to hear that that's coming from a 5-year-old who happens to, you know, go to school, going back and forth in front of the museum, say, I want to go there, Mommy. And this is, I hope more of that's going on in the community, and I think more is than we might even know about.
I think you're right, Peter. I think it is going on, and I do think that the young people have been our greatest broadcasters mm-hmm. for the McCall Show.
Absolutely. It's very cool. Anyway, in our last minute or two here, Yanni, what message would you like to leave, besides the one that you just did, for our corporate listeners? But what about everybody else? How can they participate, and how can they help out or just take advantage of what's available to us through the museum?
Well, I think the best way to take part is by coming. Go look at our murals. Visit our website. If you can find out where they are located on a map, just and take a tour and see what's happening in different parts of our community through these artistic interventions. Come to the gallery. Come visit 612 Northland when we open there in January. Just come in with an open mind. You don't need to be committed or anything like that, but just listen and absorb. And if it feels like this is my cup of tea, have a sip.
That's very encouraging. Steve Tucker is going to be on next week, who runs the Northland Center there, which is a remarkable place.
Yes.
And to participate in that, I think, will bring great energy, not only to the gallery and to our visitors, but also to that whole complex, which is an amazing, amazing investment, amazing possibility for our community. Dr. Yanni Cirin, Director of the Albright Knox Art Gallery, thank you very much for being with us today. And I appreciate the fact that you've taken time away from your family, and I know how important it was to you today. And if I'd known there was a conflict, I would have delayed it for you and let you take advantage of it. But thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you, listeners.
I'd like to thank all our listeners for being with us this morning, and we'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.